Pickaxe.
That's not just the sound of that first sip of Morning Joe. It's the sound of someone shopping for a car on Carvana from the comfort of home.
That's a good blend.
It's time to take it easy, like answering some easy questions to get pre-qualified for a car in minutes.
Talk about starting the morning right.
Just like customizing your terms so your car fits your budget.
Mm-mm-mm.
Visit Carvana.com or download the app to experience car shopping the way it should be. Convenient, comfortable. Ah.
This episode is brought to you by Reese's Peanut Butter Cups. In breaking news, leading scientists worldwide are conducting experiments to determine if Reese's Peanut Butter Cups are the perfect combination of peanut butter and chocolate. However, it appears the study was inconclusive, as the scientists couldn't help but eat all the Reese's. Because when you want something sweet, you can't do better than Reese's. Find Reese's now at a store near you.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the Triforce Podcast, coming to you from three guys sitting around on a Discord channel.
Naked as the day they were born.
Fully nude.
In a lovely, bright autumn morning.
Stark naked.
The leaves are falling off the trees.
Yeah.
And so are we. How are you guys doing? What's up? What's happening?
Doing all
What's
right.
What's the haps, yeah. Dog?
Reading.
Man, I'm like horizontal. I'm dead. I don't know why.
So, I've been streaming a lot lately. I've been doing three streams a week.
Whoa.
In the evenings. It's tough. It's like, I don't know how streamers do it, really. I was playing with Ben last night, and he said he made a load of jokes about Bodega and references to the Triforce podcast.
No
and
way.
Like, I was like blown away, okay, because no one in the Yogscast, really, or on YouTube, watches other people's stuff or knows their own.
I watch everything that you guys put out. What are you talking about?
Me too.
Exactly.
I'm up all night watching. That's why I'm always so tired. I'm like, oh, I got to watch Lewis and Zips' new videos.
There's too much content. There's just not enough hours in the day to watch it all. That's what I find.
I get my kids to watch some. I farm it out. So they watch some. They tell me about it. Mrs. F, she gets home from work. I make her watch like 10 hours of
I bought a warehouse in China, and there's like 10 people in there constantly just watching Yogscast videos and giving me updates.
Oh, dude, you're so smart. Why didn't I think of that? Jesus. Farm it out to China.
Keep up. Yeah.
Chinese viewers.
I can't
China.
Keep
view farming.
China. I was just surprised because I didn't expect it. I guess, you know, it's nice. And occasionally I do end up watching someone's series that I like, and I end up watching... I just put it on, and you know, like you would do most of our YouTube stuff. It's not stuff you have to pay attention to, right? Is it? It's kind of stuff that's sometimes in the background, or sometimes I check something out, and I'm like, oh, it's quite good, and then I end up watching the whole thing. You know, it hooks you in sometimes if it's good. But yeah, so I was chatting to Ben about it, and he was like, yeah, I listened to the, and then he sort of was quite defensive about it. He was like, oh, but I do listen to a lot of podcasts. You know, I've got like, have to put the baby to sleep, and then I'm doing the washing up, and I sit on the bus for like an hour a day. So I get through a lot of stuff.
So he was like, bailing out on the compliment almost as soon as he made it. Yeah.
The compliment.
Yeah, but
I love what you guys do, but I love lots of things. I mean, I love anything, me. I love it when it rains. I love it when it's sunny. I love it when I get stabbed in the heart.
He said
I love it all.
Which I'm not sure I really, it was kind of like, I guess it was a backhanded compliment, but it was like, so the thing I like about it is it's just three guys chatting. That's all. You know, you don't really have a plan. You can tell you don't really have anything written down or thought up. It's just.
Yeah. I mean.
Yeah.
That's almost the heart of this podcast.
It is. I'd say that's the soul of the podcast. So Ben's fired now, right?
Well, no, this is like a shout out to him right now.
Right,
so
okay.
This is to check if he actually is a genuine.
Okay, well, I will see you in a few weeks then, Ben. But for a minute there, I thought maybe I'd never see you again.
To ex-Yogscast employee Ben. Goodbye, Ben. It was nice knowing you, but you were a little vague in your praise.
Do you think we should have like a little code for hidden in something or somewhere that is basically to be a trick? Because sometimes. You when someone says, oh, I've listened to this or I'm a fan of this or whatever, my eyes narrow. I guess I'm just always a little bit dubious that anyone listens to or enjoys or watches anything.
I think if somebody comes up to me, okay, and point blank just says, not even hello or anything, just says, I got a small dick, then I'll know. I'll know that they listen to this. I'll be like, I know. I know what you're saying.
That's the code.
That could be the code.
So that
I got
is
a small ass dick. Wow.
So that is all right. That is the meeting.
Yeah.
That's the
greeting.
That's
how we greet each other.
People. Amazing. Yeah. So if you suspect someone of being a Yogscast Triforce podcast listener, you can test them by saying, I got a small dick.
Yeah, it's like it's midnight. You're in a 24/7 Tesco's. You're in like the jam aisle. There's nobody else around. It's like really quiet. You're just buying some jam. You're like, oh, finally, you know, just like 5 seconds where nobody's saying anything, and then all of a sudden, just like here beside you, I got a small dick. Turn around. Whoa, how did you get there? What's going on? Some dude in a trench coat.
We're everywhere.
He flashes you. Yeah.
Okay. So now I'm going to get Ben telling me that.
Yeah.
Sometime next week when this goes out. And also random people now telling me. And telling you, I guess.
Yeah, I can't believe this was our code word. Like, do you remember...
It's not too late. We can change it.
Do you remember back in the day on Something Awful, it used to be, do you have stairs in your house?
Yeah, yeah.
Yes.
Go on, what's the correct response?
And then the reply
that's still
was,
kind of used.
I am protected.
That's right.
I don't know why I'm telling people this. It's like a secret.
Now that's now code word. We're never going to know who goons are now.
Well, yeah, A, you can always spot a goon, and B... Yeah. It was like, as soon as it had been made as the secret call sign, it was a joke in itself. Like, people who came up to you and said, do you have stairs in your house? I am protected. You automatically knew not to speak to that person if they were a goon. Like, it was like the way of outing the non-funny,
that's true.
Good goon.
Oh, shit. So is it the opposite then?
The opposite,
so
yeah.
So if people come up to you and say, I have a small dick.
That's the bad
those are the bad people.
Fans. We need to find out, like, the good code is you don't say that shit. You just not. Yeah. Yeah.
What if you're a female, though? What do you say, like?
Well, they're right.
Yeah, I guess, but, like, shouldn't,
almost
you know.
Undetectable in the dick department, ladies. You could just say, I have a small dick. Yeah, you're right. You don't have any dick at all. Congrats.
Well, can we have something for the ladies as well that's just their own and not recycled from the men's?
Like, I have a huge vagina.
I have a gaping vagina. You think a woman would say that? Like, I think a guy, like, you know, for a joke could come up and just be
dudes
like,
talk about their dicks
dick.
A lot. You're right.
Yeah, no, but honestly, women never talk about their vaginas. Like, really?
They do. They do.
Yeah,
they
with
do.
Each other,
seen
just
the new
not with us.
South Park stuff. It's the whole women's comedy thing, isn't it? It's that
the
South Park.
Yeah.
Oh, in women's comedy,
out.
Yeah. But I mean, just like in, like, you know, day-to-day, you know, everyday conversations. Like, I'll speak to a guy and dicks will get mentioned, right?
Yeah.
But, like, I won't speak to a woman and she'll be like, oh, man, like, God, I've got a sore pussy today or something. You know, like, it doesn't...
PU55. Right.
Yeah, it doesn't. It never happens. Like, it's the great divide. You know, men. That's why men are so different to women.
That'll
women
be the mark of women's liberation. I think when they
generally
can just walk
talk
up,
about their private parts,
walk into the office, and go, "Oh, my pussy is killing me today. Oh,
my tits are just engorged today." Yeah.
Well, no, I don't think men say that about their dick. Do they? Don't say, "Oh, my dick's really chafing today."
I
like,
do.
People, men don't go, "Oh,
my
balls
are
really
so
itchy today."
It depends
today.
Where you work. If you work in a nice accounting sort of office. Or for a lawyer or someone. I mean, the lawyer doesn't walk in and go, "My goodness, my penis feels heavy today." Like that. But if you worked in, if you were stacking shelves in Tesco's, I bet dick talk comes up all the time.
If you were working in that illegal garage opposite the road from
fucking
you.
Illegal garage. Jesus Christ!
If you legitimately work in porn, I guess it comes up a lot as well. They're probably just very sort of upfront about
it better come up or you're fired.
Issues they face with their work tools, right?
Nice.
In that case, it's like work tools, right? So.
Work tools.
It'd be the same as like a mechanic saying, "Oh God, my number 5 hydro spanner's a bit rusty today. I don't think I could do it." And then, like, you know, the guy who works in porn,
you know what? That's like, one of those things, right? You know the way most people
hot rod.
Let's say you have a job doing something most people would think would be awesome. I mean, I'm thinking that eventually it'll just become like work. But surely, porn is one of the few industries where no matter how much you do it, it's still awesome. I mean, nobody gets bored of having sex, especially with different people all the time in all kinds of funky ways.
I don't know, though. Like, if you were the cameraman, I think after a while you'd get a bit bored.
Fuck the cameraman, like, dude. Who cares?
You want to be the guy. You want
to
be like...
Yeah, fuck yeah. That's what I'm saying. If you're the guy...
You want to be right in there. Yeah.
Doing the
would
sex.
Would you get bored of it? Yeah, I guess so. I mean, they say variety is the spice of life. And I think in the case of porn, I mean, every day, if you were like... you know, if you had like a new
new lady,
you know,
yep,
a new lady to or act th- or with,
three or four
to do
of
your
them
acting
even.
With.
Three or four of them, just pile them
yeah,
up.
Yeah, I mean that could, yeah, I mean that could keep it interesting as well.
Eh, I'm a little bored of this. Like you'd be like, come on, like it speaks to some animal part of our brain that just wants to fuck everything. You get to do that for a living.
What if you had like a serial sort of porn that was like a bit like a soap opera, but it always had the same actors in it,
dude,
and you were cast as like the lead guy. And you had to have like a lot of sex with the same person?
Let me tell
you
something.
Would you get bored of your job after
one? No, because sex is always awesome, all right? But let me tell you something. I was thinking about how movies are going to change in the next like 50 to 100 years, right?
Yeah.
And you know the way...
50 to 100 years?
Yeah.
Fuck me.
Dude. Society's very slow to change.
Man, we're not even going to have bodies in 100 years. We're literally
we
going to be like
think?
Fucking ghosts floating around and manipulating things with our minds.
Did
like,
you believe it?
100 years,
come on.
Man.
When
Holy
you were
shit.
A kid, did you believe all that shit about how we'd be living on the moon and living on Mars? Progress is
no.
never as fast as people think, dude. And I'm
it's
talking about...
fast,
this
though.
Is a pretty like, big bit of progress. What have we had in our lifetime? Phones. Computers
yeah.
and the internet. All right, where are the
yeah.
flying cars? Where's the hover this? Where's the hover that? Where's the
Who
teleportation?
Cares, man?
Where are the aliens?
We got Facebook now and like
My
Twitch.
Point
TV.
Is, right? It's slow. Shit is slow to progress.
Yeah.
So here's one of the ways I think things will change. We expect actors and actresses to be capable of doing all kinds of shit nowadays. You've got to be able to act. You've got to be really good looking. You've also got to be, maybe you've got to do some cool stuff like fucking Tom Hiddleston can dance and shit, right? And he's like a cool guy. And
yeah.
So the next evolution of that is that they also have to be able to fuck really well on camera. So now we'll be watching movies in the future. Like they'll be having full-on sex like porn stars. That's just going to be another part of the movie. The appetite for
Wait.
Sex and porn is there. And we'll expect our actors to be able to act and be like able to do their own stunts and be able to fuck. That's what I'm saying. We'll go to see like a Mission Impossible reboot in 2063, and whoever the new Tom Cruise is in that reboot is going to be fucking people.
It'll be Tom
and it'll
Cruise.
Be absolutely
it'll be like an
hardcore.
Android.
But
Android
is
Cruise.
He actually expected to have full sex, or
yeah,
is it
that's
dry
what I'm
humping?
Saying. That's the future.
Because Hollywood's
of film.
Dry humping, right? Like you know that you don't actually see anything because there's sheets in the way or whatever. So like most of the time they're probably just wearing like underpants.
Right, but
and
I'm
just,
saying
like,
that the next evolution
bit, right?
is they
yeah.
will be fucking. Like people will
right.
be like, I don't want to see it under the sheets. I, you know, I'm used to seeing porn on my phone whenever I want to see it. Why
in,
can't
like,
I watch people fuck? And bam,
VR.
You'll be watching. Yeah, future Jennifer Lawrence will be fucking future Tom Cruise.
I can only get hard when I see a Tom Cruise android fucking Cameron Diaz android on my phone.
It's like, what?
The future. The future.
That's the future. Man, it's weird, though, because like you were saying, you know, in the future, actors are going to be expected to do more. Like, do you think that actors have it easy now? Because in the past, I think they did have to do more. Actors had to be not only able to act, but they did have to dance and they had to be able to sing as well. You know, like a lot of older...
Red horses.
But you'd be surprised. A lot of especially
older
in America.
Movies.
But in America, a lot of actors can do a whole bunch of shit. Like they can... Like I remember talking to a friend of mine one time who'd worked in film in the UK and in America. And he said, in the UK, we produce like actors or singers or whatever. But in the States, because it's all the sort of show business thing, you should be able to do pretty much everything. And the stage schools are very much focused around being able to do dancing, singing, acting, and all that kind of stuff. So, I mean, take someone like Doogie Howser, right? What's that guy's name?
I only know him as Doogie Howser.
Well, that's because we're old, right? But he was...
what a pick.
I just said, listen, this is important, Lewis. This is a
Did
vital...
Did you just call Doogie Howser a pig?
Pick.
Oh, pick.
What
all
a
right.
pick. You've picked... for all the actors who are really talented and can do all sorts of things. You've picked
right, and I'll tell you what. I'll tell you why.
Doogie Howser's pretty legit, man.
Did
Holy
you not
shit.
See the opening that he did for the Emmys or the Grammys, whatever it was? It was like this 15-minute long, all singing, all
You're
dancing.
Talking about Neil Patrick
Harris, yeah.
right?
It was this big routine. Now, I very much doubt you could find a British actor who could do that, like the way he could do acting and he could do comedy, he can sing really well, he can dance, had this big choreography thing. That's show business, right? Like the American actors and the stars, it's all the show business. You know, they can do it all. It's almost like vaudeville is still there. They got to be able to do their act. So I'm thinking the future is that we're going to expect them to do more and more and more and more. Sex being
Man,
one of those things.
I would not want to see Doogie Howser having sex, but I would like to see Doogie Howser as a Starfleet captain. I think he'd make a really good Starfleet captain.
Yeah.
Like a teenage Starfleet captain.
He's well, not a teenager he's like anymore.
He's like Fred Savage,
isn't that the
though?
Plot of the latest few Star Wars films, Star Trek films anyway?
And then Macaulay Culkin, have you seen him recently?
Yeah.
Like, he looks like a bit like Steve Buscemi, and it's kind of weird.
He does.
Yeah, he's definitely got a bit, like, sunken cheeks, hasn't he?
It's just, yeah, it's weird. Like, he was a really cute
sunken
kid.
Eyes,
and
sunken cheeks.
He lives with that idea that he has to be this cute kid, and now he's a fucking grown-up. I mean, that must be a nightmare.
Yeah.
I know that, like, think about this.
I think a lot of these... cute kids do not grow up into cute adults.
Yeah, because they're kids and then they're adults. Well,
there's not many adults out there that are actually cute, though.
Yeah,
I mean,
but it's like we expect
you wouldn't
them.
Say Daniel Radcliffe was like a heartthrob, would
no,
you?
No, but he's...
Like, name a lot of child stars that have grown up into heartthrobs. You know, like Wesley Crusher grew up into Will Wheaton. You know, Harry Potter. Like, come on, there's loads of them. Hollywood is terrible at picking kids who grow up into decent... looking
or what about Gary Coleman? Gary Coleman was cute as an adult.
Gary Coleman was cute because he was like 5 feet tall.
But still, though. Still.
He was basically a big child. He didn't even change.
But still. I mean, he was really cute, though. He looked like a little
kid. He
was
adorable. Yeah.
I think the thing is, the things that make you extra, extra cute when you're a kid don't translate. And also, people look completely different when they're adults. Like, their faces get all big and, you know, it doesn't make sense. If your eyes are super far apart when you're a kid, you look like, oh, but if you got eyes super far apart when you're grown up, people think, wow, he looks like a fucking frog.
The fuck away from
get
me.
Get away from me, you wide-eyed freako. Get off my TV screen. Dude can't even fuck well.
You say that, but the guy from fucking, what's it called? You know, he was in Lord of the Rings and he was in The Matrix as well.
Sean Astin?
The guy that played the agent in The Matrix. He had eyes that were like... far apart from
but
each other.
But he was never cute, dude. No one looks at him and thinks Agent, you know, Agent Smith is what a cutie pie. Come on.
Well, what role did he play in Lord of the Rings?
Elrond.
He's kind of cute.
Elrond.
That's right. Elrond was like
he was a fucking elf.
Cute.
What's
know,
wrong with you?
Come on.
Hugo Weaving, his name is. Yeah. He's okay. He's not a weird-looking guy. Well, why have you picked him?
Dude, his fucking eyes are on the side of his head. Like, he's out of his head. he's like a guinea pig man or something. He's just like, they're on the side. They're like so far apart. It's crazy.
God, I hope none of these people listen to the podcast.
Oh, my God. Watch him, like, turn up.
Hugo Weaving's there, like, sitting in tears.
You're sleeping.
Like...
It's really quiet. It's the middle of the night, and you suddenly all you hear is, I got a small dick.
And it's
turn
Hugo
around,
Weaving.
You see it's Hugo Weaving standing in your room.
Tears in his eyes. I have a small dick. I heard it all.
I can't see your tears. Can you turn and give me a profile?
Oh, no.
Fuck me.
You are the worst. The worst, guys. Let's move on. So I was playing on the stream. I was playing XCOM, the Terror from the Deep.
Oh, yeah.
So it's a sequel to the original, and they just ramped up the difficulty. Yeah. And me and Ben are playing it on superhuman.
I was always under the impression that
hardest.
Was a hard game to begin with. Like, weren't a lot of people like, wasn't that like the ball achingly hard game of the series back before they started re-releasing XCOM?
And so we're playing it on superhuman difficulty and Iron Man, so we can't go back. Right. And it is an absolute meat grinder. I think for every two aliens we kill, we lose a guy. Wow. So we've had like 50 guys die and 100 aliens die so far. And the Terror missions are even worse because the Terror mission we just ended up finishing. Well, we haven't finished it yet, actually, because it's two parts. So, you know, you get through like the first part, which you barely scrape through, killing like 15 or 20 aliens. And then you have to do a second part where you clear out the engine room, room by room. And it's like, you're basically going through the Titanic. Anyway, it's a game from like 1995.
Yeah.
I can see the design. When I play the old games, I can see how that design has influenced the new XCOM. Because you've been playing that, PFLAX. And I think that they've taken a lot of stuff, which is fairly repetitive in the original game. It's amazing how they've really taken that kind of influence and the design philosophy to heart when they built the new XCOMs, which are
well,
amazing.
Well, I think the new XCOMs are meant to be they follow the spirit of the old games, and like because the older games, because XCOM as a franchise is a really funny one, isn't it? Like, it had the first game was very popular. There was nothing really like it at the time when it came out. And then I think it was A Tear from the Deep did pretty well. But then publishers changed hands and the developers changed hands and the actual sort of rights to the game changed hands so much. And they tried to make like a first-person shooter that didn't really work. And they tried to make some other genre of game that didn't work.
They tried to make, they made XCOM, I think it's called XCOM Apocalypse, which is, which was pretty bad, honestly.
Yeah, yeah.
They made one that was like, you had to shoot down the alien ships. It was like a space shooter. It was fucking awful.
There was some that just came out on console. Yeah. And it was like that thing that they did in the 90s, you know, where the games industry was totally different back then, right? Like, they'd release a game and it would be a surprise success. And then nobody would know what the fuck to do with the surprise success.
Yeah, yeah.
So they would just be like, well, what's popular now? Well, everybody's playing platformers now. Let's do an XCOM platformer, and of course it fucking sucks.
It was like
it's like Game Dev
Tycoon when you try to make you make a hit game, the next game you make is always a piece of shit. I don't know.
Yeah,
they
were just stabbing in the dark, sort of thing. Like, and I think when XCOM Enemy Unknown came out, I think, you know, 2K picked it up and they were like, the original games are the best. A lot of the guys that are working on this are huge fans of the original games and played them and stuff. And let's like keep this game the way it was meant to be, sort of thing. And then XCOM 2 is just, you know, an iteration of that, and it, you know, arguably much better. And I mean, XCOM 2 is like,
so it's amazing. Yeah,
it's like a fucking masterpiece of a game. Like, it's probably one of the best games that's come out in 2016.
Yeah, I think so.
For sure.
I mean, I think it's one of the best games of all time. Like, I really do.
I think it's amazing.
It's absolutely brilliant.
A really good game.
The thing is, the thing they got was, they don't have any repetitive shit in it that doesn't feel dramatic. Like, it always feels dramatic. They always manage to make it feel like you're part of something really big, and this is like your movie that you're making as you're going along.
Yeah. It's pretty cool.
I was streaming it like last week. I was streaming it for like 2 weeks. I was really into it, and I was playing it on Iron Man, and I kept restarting. Every time we failed, I would restart, and we got to restart number 20, right? That's how many restarts I had to do. Yeah, yeah. Dude, it was brutal, right? I wasn't playing on Veteran. I wasn't playing on Impossible or anything. We're getting through it. We're doing it. We got this great team, had a really good start, and just snowballed from there. We get to the final mission. We're fighting the final mission.
No way.
When you have to kill, spoiler alert, you have to kill three of these sort of avatar
things. It's a tough one.
It is
in
tough.
Is that the final room as well?
So we killed two of them, no problem. We're down to the last one. If I can kill him, we've got a shot. Right, we got a shot at getting out with just one person. The avatar needs to survive, so even if I only get him out, so what? I've got this amazing psi operative. I've got the avatar can do stuff, so we're mind controlling shit. We're killing everything. We see the avatar. You know the way every time you hit him, he teleports, right?
Yeah.
He teleports. I hit him. He teleports again. He's in range. I get two shots on him. Both of them are 50 to 51% shots. Missed both of them. Lost the game on that turn. They killed the avatar somehow, and that was it. GG. And it was devastating. Like, they said, restart. Like I said, you can restart, but I'm not fucking restarting it. It's Iron Man.
Oh,
man.
Yeah, the final mission, you are allowed to restart the final mission.
But I didn't. Everyone was like, restart it. I was like, no, this is the story of what happened. They came down to
one shot
to save the Earth, and he missed.
Wow.
That's what it's about. It's about those memorable stories, right, though? Much more, I think.
Yeah.
If you can... Iron Man, like, I'm glad they've added that settings of games, because it has... It has some games it's not needed in at all, but some games it's really a cool option sometimes for a certain game mode.
Yeah, I think it spices things up for sure, because you never know, you know, the way XCOM goes. You could be meticulous, you can plan everything to perfection, and something can go wrong.
Yeah.
And, you know, you might lose your all-star guy or guys on a mission, and that'll fuck you up big time. Like, XCOM's pretty good. You can sort of breeze through it past a certain point.
Yeah,
you know, if you get a couple of guys who are sort of almost maxed out, they've all got, you know, really good abilities and synergies and stuff, and it's fine. But man, you can really sort of get halfway through the game, fuck up on a mission or something, lose a couple of people, and it'll screw you hard.
We had that quite a few times. Do you know, there are some things I found that I use a lot of mods. I use a Long War mod and a whole bunch of other mods. So there's all kinds of new aliens and new gear and all that kind of shit. It's great. New classes.
Yeah.
There's one mod that makes every single soldier will always get the bleed out option.
Oh, right.
Right. So when they're down, they'll bleed out. You've got four turns to get to them. Now, so you might think that makes it easier, but it does a little bit, because you don't just get, because sometimes I was getting guys who were like really high level just getting one shotted. Like they got unlucky, they got critted, they're one shot, they're dead.
Yeah.
And I'm like, but that's like a restart if I lose a guy like that. Like I can't go without these two guys. Like that's it. Our squad is now two experienced guys and four rookies, and we're like doing a black site mission. It's like impossible. So with the bleed out option, you can save those guys, but getting them out in itself is dramatic, because we call down the evac, you're running under fire, picking him up, getting out. That's great. Like, I like that. So I think it made it a better story having the bleed out in there. And honestly, I was sick of restarting. I mean, restart number 20. It was literally, I'd come to one mission and I'd come around a corner and I'd aggro a pack of Vipers. They'd bind one of my guys. They'd poison the rest. A dude panics. And as he panics, he aggroes a bunch more Vipers. I'm like, okay, fuck this game. I'm done. So yeah. Having the bleed out option there was handy, because it meant we could sort of bail on a situation. But it's just so great. It's just such a great game.
It is a great game, yeah.
I have started to be more angry as a gamer like you, in terms of like rage quitting out of games sometimes. You know, just think, no, whoa, I'm done. Like,
guys,
like
did you hear Sips's anger?
Holy fuck, I lost it.
You did?
Wow, I fucking lost it.
I didn't think that was you for a second. And I was like, oh my God.
So fucking frustrating. It was a culmination though. Like, it was like, you know when you're playing Dota and you have a team and your team is doing okay, and then all of a sudden you just don't know what your fucking team is doing. Like, they're all over the place, they're feeding, they're dying, yeah, they're not doing the shit they're meant to be doing. And you have that moment where you're just like, fuck this game. I just want to quit out and never play it again. And I legitimately had that yesterday with Overwatch. But I mean, I kept playing. It was still pretty fun. But
you were so angry.
So mad. Oh my God. It was just so frustrating.
I have heard that from you a few times, like that. Angry, like genuinely angry.
But it's hilarious because you're angry, and then for a split second you're super mad, and then you're like, what the fuck, like why am I getting mad at a video game?
Yeah.
You just like sort of have to like laugh it off a bit. But it, oh man, it's amazing that it, like, because when I was a kid I'd rage at games all the time, you know, like especially growing up like in the, you know, the NES era,
God,
you know,
almighty, with, like, yeah,
those really ball hard games that, you know, are meant to consume quarters and stuff, you know, like you would end up raging out. Like I broke a couple of controllers,
oh, easily,
throwing them against a wall and stuff, like you did. But like I you know, the older you get, you chill out a lot more and you don't really care and stuff like that. But it's amazing, like even at this age now, every once in a while I will get so fucking annoyed at a game, like just so angry, and I'm just like, man, I would never get angry at anything else like this.
I don't think I ever got angry with games when I was younger. I genuinely don't think I experience games in that way. I didn't see them as this thing to trigger me and make me frustrated. Like, I don't know, it's new thing to me. I think the first time I really experienced that game that was rage inducing was Dark Souls, playing it with a controller, and just, you know, just, well, I think when the game was unfair.
Yeah.
I don't think games necessarily, at least not for me, maybe I'm wrong, maybe I'm looking at this completely wrong, but I feel like certain games frustrate you when it feels like bullshit.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And it's like when you play a game of Hearthstone and he just draws every single thing that he needs in the perfect order every time, and you have to accept that that's going to happen.
Yeah,
some games,
but
you know,
it feels
one in 100
so
games,
awful when it does happen.
Someone is just going to pull out every single answer every time, and then you don't get any answers, and it's like, oh come on, you know. And there's the flip side to that, and it feels great when it's happening to you, but you know, I don't know. It's a recent thing, definitely for me.
I used to get around to my friend's house, my friend Simon, and he had a twin brother, and they used to get very, very angry and animated when they played video games. He will deny this, but it's true. I remember going around there, and he had these Super Nintendo controllers, and there were tooth marks all over the controllers. And I was like, well, how did this happen? Because I sometimes just get so angry, just bite the controller. And these controllers, it looked like someone had given them to a dog as a chew toy. That's how bitten these things were. So they were just like, just like biting the controller in a fury.
Man.
That's angry at video games.
We had a controller. We had a Super Nintendo controller, but it was like, it was one of those ones that didn't come with the Super Nintendo. It was like a fancy one, like that you bought separately. I think my brother got it for his birthday or something.
They were always totally inferior, though.
Yeah, yeah, like, but like it was a little bit so bigger no than the normal ones and stuff. And it was okay, right? But it got smashed up. Like the side of it got smashed up. Where the buttons were,
right?
Because I think one of us just chucked it against the ground or something in some sort of rage, and so the side of it was smashed up and. It was smashed up to the point where some of the buttons didn't work and you had to push down the controller, like push it back together for the buttons to work. So my dad put like this huge screw in the side, but like the sharp end was sticking up where the buttons were, like just a little bit, like even though he like filed it down a bit, but it was just a little bit. So like if you played with that controller for like longer than an hour, your thumb got all sweaty and it would scrape against this like screw and it would get all fucking mangled. Shit. Well, I don't know why we didn't just get a new one, yeah. But like we just had this like Frankenstein controller that nobody wanted to use because like, it would just fuck up your thumb. It was so
but
funny.
But that's because when you were a kid that you couldn't just get a new one.
No, that's
right?
It. Like, you didn't have disposable income or anything. Like you had to wait till a birthday.
No, you had to ask your parents for it and then they wouldn't like do it. They'd be like, you've already got one. It's like, do you really need it? And you're like, and then they're like, well, we can get you a controller or a game. And you're
birthday.
Like, well, I just have a new game.
I think it got
like,
smashed
you know
up. It got smashed up during Super Metroid. And you could do that like sticky wall jump. And there were parts of the game where you had to do that thing where you had to leap from wall to wall, like up a... Like a shaft sort of thing. And if you were playing it for a long time, your hands were all clammy. It was impossible to do because it was just your hands are all sweaty and sliding off the buttons and stuff.
So
oh,
I guess I just
me.
Didn't play these types of game.
Like, no, you're
I
just
guess
a cerebral and perfect professor of gaming, Lewis, is what it is.
You're just like a bubble boy playing like Civ and stuff.
So are you, well, your yeah. human emotions are not welcome here in the games room of Lewis Brindley.
We've been playing a bit of Hearts of Iron, haven't we? And I've been playing a bit of Hearts of Iron. And I think what I like most about Hearts of Iron is that it's just such a cool multiplayer experience, right, where you know you can co-op on the same country, you know, if you want to just play with a friend and like, you know, take on a little, you know, France or Italy or whatever, you can play it with a friend, you can play it with a friend on a similar country, you can play it like with like 20 people or two or whatever. I like how that all just works. I think the controls and like Some of the
UI and stuff is a little bit
frustrating.
It can
and
be,
really fiddly.
The thing I like
such a ball ache.
The thing I love about Hearts of Iron is that it takes a little while for it to click in a way.
Yeah.
Like because you sort of you approach a game like that and it's a big strategy game and you think I got to be on top of everything. I need to know what's going on. I need this that and like. In a lot of ways, you don't. And I like, even especially in multiplayer, I like how there's three of us just playing and like we're all just doing something, but it doesn't necessarily tie into what the other person is doing all the time.
Yeah,
or whatever.
Yeah.
You know, like we have like these national goals and, you know, obviously like we all want to be, you know, part of a faction or something. But I like how you can really focus like on a front line somewhere and that can take all of your focus and nothing else. And then you sort of come out of that and you're like, oh yeah, shit, I need to produce some of this and then I have to do that. And like, you're always just sort of like focusing in little areas sort of thing.
Yeah,
I just love the flow of it. I really enjoyed that
game. Someone was
a lot.
Suggesting for the Christmas live stream that we do like a big multiplayer game of Hearts of Iron, which I think would be, great.
Be great.
But someone suggested...
Get 7 people to play all the majors. Yeah.
That would be messy.
Someone suggested 32 players using viewers, but... The game Fuck gets me. Very laggy, and apparently it crashes a lot. So I think 8 is about the most we could do.
Well, they've added this resync thing on the latest patch. So basically, if anyone desyncs, normally you had to reload the save, and then it'd be a real fiddle. But now you can just press resync, and it dynamically loads the game in-game. It just sends the save to everyone.
But I think the issue is it does that constantly. Like, the more players you have...
I think any game like Civ running 32 players is not going to be a good option.
Yeah.
But... You know, there's still options there. I think one of the things that's interesting is that, you know, that Hearts of Iron don't have to balance countries necessarily. They don't have to say, okay, Germany has to be the same strength as Italy, or has to be the same strength as this, or same strength as that. You know, they're all different. They have different sizes, different strengths. You know, certain people have to team up or work together to take down a big guy.
Yeah.
Whereas Civ is much a different game in a sense. You can't just go into a game of Civ as easily as you go into a game of Hearts of Iron. It's a lot more of I think one of the things that's interesting is we'll have to see this when it comes out, And it's coming out, I guess, the day after this podcast goes live. So, what? You know, there's probably going to be a lot of hype for it. The 21st
of... Oh, yeah, the Stellaris patch.
Yeah. Oh, no. Civ 6.
Oh, shit. Oh,
out.
Yeah, and, yeah, that too. Yeah.
When is Civ 6 out?
20th of October.
21st.
Is it 21st?
Oh, wow.
There was 21st or is it 20th?
Let's have a quick...
One of those two. Nice. Anyway, I think that one of the interesting things is they've said they've tried to sort of get rid of the boring mid-game. And it feels like it does
ramp
up very quickly towards the end of the game, which I'm a little bit...
Civ's a bit different, though, because Civ, you really want to sort of conquer the world, right? Like, you, no matter where you start from, you it's not like you're not going to just play a part in it. You want to get to a point where you win and you dominate, sort of thing. But, like, it's different to Hearts of Iron, where you could have a playthrough of a game of Hearts of Iron where you could just take, like, a small little country and you can influence the war,
but you might not be
the dominant superpower by the end of it. Or anywhere close, you might have just enough, like, in your little country to sway things.
It
or,
might just be that you
know
are,
what I mean?
You are blocking the way, like the Netherlands and Belgium blocking the way into France. You know,
which
that,
is, which
if you
is,
can hold.
I love that. I love how each time you play it, it can be different. You know, you could just do something different, or you know, attempt to do something different. You know, like everybody else might be just following the historical path, and there you are trying to like turn America into fascists or something. And then if you pull it off and you help. You could totally change the way that game plays out, sort of thing. Whereas, like, Civ's a different type of strategy game, isn't it? It's like you don't really get stuff like that in Civ. You're trying to win. You're trying to like meet some sort of objective.
Yeah, yeah.
And there's different ways to win, but it always involves you sort of amassing power and influence and becoming like a big player, sort of thing.
The best part of it is definitely that open a brand new, find a brand new world, settle the city, expand out till you've sort of got your borders touching, expand it to everywhere you can. And that's kind of that first 100 turns is what it's all about for me. Like the rest of the game is kind of, It changes. The whole game changes. It changes from as the game goes on to a very different. It's got these phases where it transforms into a slightly different game.
Hearts of Iron
and Civ. And so some of the Hearts of Iron is pretty much the same the whole way through. But Civ
isn't. I'd love a game that was like city focused that had some sort of like arcing strategy to it. You know, like it was multiplayer. You had cities and you had to build them up in certain ways to accommodate certain things, and there are factions and stuff. Like, I don't know, like how it would totally work.
Competitive city skylines or something. Like, you have a large area.
Yeah, something like that, where, you know, like, and you could accept trade into your cities and out, and you could screw over other people.
Yeah, yeah. And you're competing to have, like, maybe you go tourism, so you build, like, a tourist-based city.
Yeah.
And you're trying to out-tourist the other cities, and that would be interesting, actually. Like,
it'd be pretty fun, yeah.
And you
can,
like,
I would totally play
sabotage
that.
Their cities and shit. That would be funny.
Yeah, it'd be pretty neat. Like SimCity, the last SimCity that came out, the way that multiplayer worked in that game, where you had the region and you invited people and they all made their own cities. And there's so many problems with that game anyway, but it was interesting that you could send workers to other cities, you could trade with other cities. Not that it ever really worked, but the ideas were sort of there, you know? Like, it would be cool if there was a game that was a bit more sort of like... there was like some sort of strategy to it where, you built up a city and you had to be very careful, like what you built and what you tried to do. And there was like, you know, factions that you could sort of be part of or whatever.
Yeah,
it'd be pretty neat, actually.
It's bizarre, really, isn't it? Like, what makes a good multiplayer game? I think I guess the classic multiplayer games these days are, you know, like Overwatch or Dota or League of Legends or Hearthstone, where you're queued up, you're shoved into an arena for an X amount of time against other people. And very rarely do you talk with those people or communicate with those people in any meaningful way, or even do you have a chance, because it's so, the sort of, it's such an in-out thing. You're shoved in with these random people. You might say 5 sentences to them in the whole thing, and that will be like, you know, go over here, do this, whatever.
Yeah.
But even then, like, I don't.
These, like, a lot of these games are like are very sort of typical in like a gamer mentality sense, though, right? Like, Dota is probably the same. League of Legends was definitely the same. Overwatch is the same. You get into a party with people that you don't know, and immediately two or three people pick big damage dealing heroes, right? That their only job is to get out there and deal a lot of damage and kill people, right? And then once the game starts and 5 minutes into it, you slowly start to realize that these people that have picked these heroes aren't doing that job. Like, they're terrible with them. And then the whole thing falls apart from there. You're just like, oh, geez, why?
Yeah, yeah.
Why join a game and just pick this hero that is meant to have such a huge sort of sway on the game and not be able to even remotely use them effectively? Like, it just, it's crazy. I think
that might just be a problem that gets solved by placement, though. I mean, when I'm playing Dota, I very rarely have that problem. I always think I'm the weakest person on the team when I'm playing.
Yeah.
And therefore I never feel frustrated with my team being bad. I think you might just be too low in the placement games if that's the case. But that's not really what I'm talking about. I'm talking about the fact that relationships, you're never going to ever exchange contact details with or follow up on a person that you've met in a fucking Overwatch game, right?
You would. I think it's different, probably. I think honestly you would. And I think the reason why you're saying that you wouldn't is because you're known on the internet. So you're probably always thinking like, oh, this person already knows who I am and they want to just be on my friends list or whatever. And
that's not true.
On that basis, you're probably like, true. Oh, I don't need to make friends on the internet. But like if you didn't have a big YouTube channel and stuff like that, you probably would accept friend requests from time to time from people you enjoyed playing with. Like,
I play a lot of games undercover, you know, on other usernames. Most of my gaming is on other usernames, right? And I do chat to people on like random TeamSpeaks and random fucking Discord channels and stuff. And I think that in those certain types of game are much more geared towards actually making friends on the internet. But that's how this whole thing arose in the first place, right? Because of World of Warcraft and Ye Old Goon Squad.
Do you go by the name XXX Pussy Destroyer 420XXX? Is that one of your
Sephiroth
raids?
How did you know?
I can tell.
Goku.
My secret's out. I'm going to have to change it now.
Pussy Destroyer.
My name's actually I Have a Small Dick.
Oh! Yeah,
that's it.
Oh.
Yeah. It's a Triforce podcast reference.
Oh, I see. And
occasionally people come up to me and they're like, hey, I have a small dick too. And then I know that they have the Triforce. They've listened to the Triforce podcast.
Hey, sorry. Hopefully I get this right. I got a clown dick. No, shit. I screwed it up. I messed up.
No, it's not that. It's I got a huge pussy. Yeah. I got a huge vagina.
I got a hilarious clown
God,
penis.
You know what I watched the other day? This was a thing on the news about how dangerous watch batteries are for kids. You know those little flat circular batteries you put in watches and like remote controls and stuff. They're like, it's like, looks like a coin, right?
Yeah.
So what happens is the kids swallow those because kids are idiots, and it gets stuck in their throat. And when it's wet, it just activates. Like, it just starts to produce electricity and like chemicals boil out of it.
Fuck.
And it can burn a hole in the kid's esophagus. And that's them, like, they can't talk or they can't swallow anymore or stuff like that. There was this little girl walking around. She had like a bag on her neck to catch her spit because she can no longer swallow spit and stuff like that. And I'm watching this and I'm thinking, I had no...
Holy shit, this podcast is supposed to be fun.
Sake.
Dude.
Fuck me, people.
I want to put the word out there that these things are dangerous and kids are stupid. Keep away from your kids. I made them watch that news report. It was on and I said, kids, watch this.
Dumb shit,
and they watched
it's true.
It. And they were shaken. And I was like, yeah.
Well, I'm shaking right now.
Man,
that's terrifying.
Me.
Yeah, it's horrible. Yeah.
A spit bag. I've never known anything like it.
No, it was grim. But anyway, I just want you to be aware, parents and children listening to this podcast.
Do you think like back in like in the old Wild West, like if a kid accidentally swallowed a battery and because they didn't have plastic bags back then, they'd just have to walk around with like a spittoon sort of like strapped to their front.
A little mini spittoon on their neck.
Yeah, just ding! Like catching the spit.
We're bad people.
I'm bad. I'm a bad man. Man, I don't know about you, Flax, but like since having kids, like I never really watch the news anymore.
I watch it all the time.
I barely ever read the paper anymore.
See, his kids are older than you.
I guess so, yeah. No, I just feel like I'm super duper like out of touch with politics and stuff now. Like I just don't.
It's nice.
I don't give a fuck either.
We found that with my dad, if we just removed the newspapers, like because he used to get the newspaper delivered, and we stopped having it delivered, he cheered up so much not reading the news, not seeing the news, because it was just miserable.
It's pretty bad.
Honestly,
yeah.
It doesn't help you live your life to know all of the, you know, that it's
that's
so sensationalist.
That's terrible, man.
It's so...
That's how people get away with shit if you stop watching.
Yeah.
No, it doesn't matter. Like, who cares?
What are you fucking talking about?
Some of it doesn't matter.
What can you do about it, PFLAX? Fuck all.
I can protest, Lewis, in the strongest possible terms.
Good work stopping
Brexit,
PFLAX.
Send me pictures when you go for a protest.
Why was it my fault, Lewis? I didn't realize I was tasked with preventing Brexit. Like, my soul's purpose for this life on this planet was, well done, Perry, and you fucked up Brexit,
certainly
didn't you?
Certainly talked about it enough and, like, went on about it enough. Jeez. It's like my dad, though, you know. It's like, look, you're 70 years old. What are you going to do? Write
Dude,
a letter
I thought
to...
your dad was 80.
Well, no, this
He's
was when he was 70.
He's 10 years younger every time I talk to you.
My dad's 60 years old.
Shit.
My dad, he's 80 now. But yeah, this was when he was 70. So,
oh, right.
So even then, we okay. were like, you know, fuck. Even if he was 60, we're like, we should have started sooner. When you're like 70 years old, right? You should just be reckless, like a kid. Kids don't need to know about.
What do you mean you should be reckless
and all the war and
Man,
stuff?
70 year olds don't want to be
spit
reckless.
Bags. Kids don't need to know about spit bags.
Oh,
PFLAX.
They do. Oh.
If you try to live your life shutting yourself off from all the scary shit out there and pretending everything's all right, you may as well be a goldfish. Or a fucking
You know, listen,
dog.
I'm not doing this on purpose. It's just a natural state that I've arrived in, and I think it's just from having like a lot to do and stuff. I don't prioritize that shit. Like I don't really make an effort to watch the news or read a paper now. I just think whatever.
I disagree. Like what are the elements of sort of
Is this going to be about Zen?
Yeah.
Oh, man.
Oh, you
Zen
motherfucker.
It really says that you shouldn't
I'm ready.
In your life expose yourself to things that you know are bad or kind of negative, or it doesn't help you to this is not really a Zen thing either, but a classic thing that you see when you look at these scientific studies is that people who are identify themselves as being smart or educated or
right.
knowledgeable are often a lot less happy and a lot more stressed and die younger and with not such a happy life as people who are simple and live simple lives. And when you look at countries in the world that are the unhappiest countries, the most miserable countries, are the people who have everything.
It's the UK has got to be the top most. Of that one.
No, we're just never happy. I think there's a difference.
Fucking miserable country. Jeez.
I don't think the UK is on the worst, but it's definitely up there. And it's to do with people really kind of getting frustrated with things they can't change, you know.
Right. Like
and
Brexit.
Yeah, it's just not worth it. Like, don't do it. I can see why we're bombarded with stuff, right, in our society, with social media and Twitter and Facebook and Reddit and everything, just bombarded with it all the fucking time. And
but, I mean, you can choose who you follow on those things. Like, I don't feel bombarded by anything other than tons of memes on Twitter, for example.
I guess what I'm just trying to say is that you shouldn't surround yourself with negativity or try to avoid it where you can, and it'll help you.
I think what PFLAX says stands, though. I think if you never know what's going on or ever have any sort of make any effort to find out what's happening in the world or whatever as well, then, you know, that's not good either.
Well, how does it help? Like, it doesn't fucking do anything.
But
it just makes you rot in your own.
If you just want to live a life where all you do is hear about the good stuff, and it's just like, I don't want to hear about the bad news. No, don't tell me. Then you're deceiving yourself.
If you enjoy it, if you get a kick out of it, if you like to doomsday it up and think, oh, you know, it's all blah, 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 everything's going to shit, whatever. Like,
I'm not saying doomsday. I'm saying, like, you know, the guy on the news where a snake came out of his toilet. I think that's good stuff to know. I think, you know.
Do you know, then you know, to
check your toilet a couple of times a day, make sure there's no snakes coming out
of there.
I've
just realized.
Snakes are dangerous.
You know what, Sibs? Do you remember when Lewis mocked you for your response to a crisis being blacking out? Lewis is advocating blacking out 100% of the time to avoid having to hear about bad
stuff.
That's all I'm saying. It's the
right?
same fucking
yeah,
thing.
Sounds, yeah.
If you,
Me,
listener,
yeah.
out there,
Me, listener.
Want to perhaps achieve happiness,
yeah.
secretly don't get involved in any of the shit and let everyone else deal with it. But
don't
you,
listen to him. Right? Don't listen to
you. Just fucking let all those assholes tell you whatever they want, right? And do whatever they want. Like, you know,
this is awful advice.
Because you, at the end of the day, are never gonna have an impact on changing it. Right.
Whatever do you know what?
If you talk to your family, if you say to your son and your wife and your other son, and you tell them over the dinner table, and you rant and you rave and you moan and you complain about how terrible the state of the country is, and oh, what are we going to do about Trident? Oh, you know what? Get your fish fingers, but we're also going to figure out Trident, right? What's your suggestion? Oh, yeah, that's a great suggestion. Do you know what? I'll write a letter to David Cameron, and we'll send it off tomorrow, and that will get Trident sorted. Well done, family. Great job. You know, that's not the fucking attitude, is it?
You know what?
How is that positive for anyone?
You are basically Russell Brand. Do you realise that? Don't bother voting, kids. It's a waste of time. We can't change anything anyway. That's how the fucking assholes get in power in the first place, Lewis.
But it's a point of road to nowhere.
No, it's not. Right. Two things to change the subject again, mercifully. Number one, fucking dude, Civ 6 is £50.
Oh, I know. Games are really expensive now.
£50. Holy God.
Mafia 3 was as well. It's £50.
That's fucking crazy.
I know.
And number two, part Cinco?
Oh, shit.
It's up to you.
I almost forgot.
It's up to you guys. We don't have to.
I think we have to have it now because this podcast has
Bodega.
Been so desperately depressing. Like,
well,
this is
a very different part from the other part.
I think this podcast is going to be very heavily cut down, by the way.
That's a shame.
Yeah, I think
but
a lot of it's going to have to go.
Not the Bodega, though.
It was just partly because we had a few bits on Discord where one of us couldn't hear the other one, and so as a result, we only heard half of a rant and then didn't reply to it properly. It was like a really poorly organized debate where no one was listening to each other. No one listens to each other anyway on this podcast. There's a thing people say, and it's like most people only wait until other people stop speaking so they can speak or something. There's a more succinct way to say that, I'm sure, but I think that's very, very true on this podcast anyway. So anyway, do your Bodega. Let's fucking get in there. Let's enjoy it.
Yeah. I don't feel like you're in the right frame of mind for a Bodega.
Ben said about Bodega, he said, the thing I like about Bodega is that it's taking the piss out of all the shit science fiction.
Exactly.
But then it's become its own thing.
Yeah, who knew?
It's grown beyond it to the point where it's a little bit like pandas in World of Warcraft, okay? It started off...
I knew World of Warcraft would fucking come up at some point. Jesus.
It started off being a joke, but now... It's
Man,
coming
I
to a whole
been playing
expansion.
It at all recently.
And there's going to be like a Bodega book, and it's going to become a real thing now.
Well, here's one thing I am going to do. Someone suggested this on Twitter, that I do a video where I read out the fan Bodega that people have made. Like, they said you should do a Triforce where you do that, but the thing is, they're quite long, and there's a lot of them, and it would just be me talking for an hour.
There are pages and pages.
Yeah.
If you're going to do a fan Bodega, please make it so that it would take 5 or 7 minutes to read. I think that's reasonable.
Oh, yeah, they're mostly about 1 to 2 pages. Some of the longer ones I just won't do, but there are definitely some briefer ones. Some of them are terrible. Some of them are actually pretty good, but I'm going to read them all. And I don't know if I should critique them, but I might give them marks out of 10. I don't know. But anyway, Bodega, part Cinco. This is very different from other Bodegas, this one, okay?
Okay, I mean, in a bad way?
You'll see.
All right.
Scratching the itchy collar of his dull gray uniform, Ensign Crunkett waited impatiently outside Commander Tortola's quarters. He'd made an appointment to see Tortola 3 days ago. How the scriv can the boss man be so busy? They'd been sat in this asteroid belt on silent running for 3 months with no orders that he knew of. What a waste of time. 3 months jammed into every crevice of this fast patrol ship, except for the areas that were mysteriously off-limits. That meant no trips to engineering to hang out with his buddy Looper. Definitely no trips to the cargo hold, which was normally a good vape spot. 3 months manning his listening post and hearing nothing. It was space. It was generally pretty flarving quiet. Startling Crunkett, the intercom to Tortola's room barked, "Enter!" And the door hissed open. Crunkett stooped to enter the commander's quarters. They were cramped, yet the designers had still found room to cram a desk in here along with a bed, a bathroom, and a lounge, all in dull official grey. That was the colour of most things around here, official grey. Tortola was sat in his grey uniform and his grey chair behind the grey desk, staring at his computer screen. He made a condescending hand gesture to Crunkett to begin talking. Prunkett cleared his throat. Sir, it's been 3 months. I was due some R&R 2 weeks ago, but because we're stuck here, I missed the birth of my daughter, and I'm thinking... Tortola cut him off with a glance. He read from the screen. Crunkett. Ensign Crunkett. 2 years service on the force. And here you are marching into my quarters to demand leave. We're on a mission. You don't need to know what that mission is, Ensign, but by groggle, we're on it. You signed over your right to a holiday when you took the oath and put on a badge, said Tortola. A rehearsed dressing down was on its way, Crunkett guessed. Tortola stood up sharply in an attempt to look authoritative, but banged his head on the low ceiling. Pretending this hadn't happened, he continued, lecturing Crunkett about duty and the importance of the Morality Police Division out here in the void of space. How beings could lose their sense of direction and decency, and needed to know that out here in the blackness there was still an organization dedicated to rooting out wrong and bringing justice to the unjust. Just because space is cold and uncaring doesn't mean we have to be. Sir, I've worked law enforcement before. I've done stakeouts before. This feels like a stakeout, but we're staking out an asteroid belt in the arse end of nowhere. Nobody comes here because these rocks are empty. There are no habitable planets. There is no traffic. There's nothing. If I'd known this was going to be the mission, I never would have signed up for it, pleaded Crunkett. I thought we were going to be back in time for my wife's due date. This is the SS expectation, Ensign, said Tortola, gesturing around him. We're not your usual police cruiser. There's a reason we didn't tell any of you what your mission was. You're getting paid time and a half, so you're being compensated appropriately. I'm not going to ask you to trust me, because this is not about trust. This is about duty. Do your job. Get out of my office, said Tortola coldly. Crunkett left. He wasn't angry. The worker man always got screwed over like this. He was resigned to it. He just wanted to make sure his daughter had better. Crunkett was in the middle of wondering what he was going to do when the red lighting pulsing in the floor and at every comm station told him that the silent alarm had been tripped. He ran to his post, jostling with other members of the crew doing the same. Part of him was nervous. Another part thought, thank Flav, something to do. Tortola was on the bridge in a heartbeat after everyone else. He addressed the crew. Okay, people, it's time to come clean. We've just detected the vessel we were sent to find. We're just one of hundreds of ships just like ours undertaking the same mission all over the galaxy. For 3 months, we've been laying in wait like Tredorian trap crabs. And now, finally, we've detected the ship. It's docking at a hidden base on an asteroid in the Borkaba belt, just a few 100,000 clicks ahead of us. It is vital that we maintain silent running. Ensign Crunkett, go to work. Crunkett slid into his seat and rummaged for his headset. The chatter on the bridge was reaching fever pitch. Everybody was thinking the same thing. Holy shit, something's actually happening. Something's happening. But what? The listening post was incredibly high-tech. He used an almost undetectable array of ultra-fine beams of varying compositions to scan a huge area of space and detect micro-distortions caused by sound waves. In space, of course, there was no sound, but the beam array carried enough different types and layers that even the most well-shielded surface could be probed, and you could listen in to anything pressurized, even a space helmet. And once something was detected, the array could narrow down to that point and listen into anything. The sound of weapons being charged, an ultra-quiet engine, even a conversation, or what Crunkett heard, a man whistling a jaunty tune. He recognized the tune. It was Ode to the Lasgun, a famous war song from Shrovia, the planet of war. Shrovians? Out here in deep space? They normally stuck to their factories and boardrooms, coming up with new and terrible weaponry. Then he heard talking, someone recording a personal log. And when he heard the voice, his blood froze in his veins and he felt tears welling in his eyes. This was the dread fear that consumed all hope in a man. Sir, he mumbled. Crunkett, speak, man. Sir, I think it's Bodega. Tortola stood slowly, steeling himself. Ensign Zither, send the whisper, said Tortola. And the tiny scout vessel of the MPD fired a single subspace particle from its comms array. That single particle would be lost in the background noise of the universe to anyone listening. Impossible to decrypt, impossible to detect. Bodega could not know that the MPD vessel expectation just sent a one-bit signal that MPD HQ would instantly know meant one thing. Operation Kill Bodega was on.
Bodega. Oh, amazing. So, okay, couple of things. First of all, I like how it's good shit sci-fi because it's the same shit we're familiar with, yet massively far in the future. You know, you've got an ensign and a grumpy guy and like a military boardroom and all that shit and vaping in like a... Right. And do you know what I mean? It's like Edson Crockett is totally the Mary Sue of Peary and Flax. You know, you are. If you put yourself into this universe, you would be.
I wouldn't be Edson Crockett.
You're totally Edson Crockett. There's so much Mary Suing going on.
I'm Bodega. Like, come on.
No, you're not. You're Edson Crockett.
I'm a cold, hard killer.
Like the hard, dumb boy, like guy who's like pretty low rank. He's like a bit sick of it. He's had some missing stories.
I wouldn't even be in the police, man. I wouldn't sign up with the Popo. Come 100% on.
That. And I like this because by the time something gets to like part five, right, it's got a bit bad, right? And they start doing things like introducing new characters. No, because everyone says, I just wanna have a bodega adventure. But the author's like, oh, I'm a bit sick of writing bodega adventures. You know what I'm going to do? I'm going to add some new characters. So he adds Ensign Crunk and he adds this new guy. And everyone's like, oh, well, it's not the bodega I remember, but at least it's not a bodega.
Bodega wasn't even in this episode, really.
Yeah, and that's what starts happening when they start getting to like these, you know, later stage sequels and stuff.
As a counterpoint, Flax, I thought it was fucking great.
Like, no, I loved really it. I loved good. All
it's
of
building,
it.
I, it's I'm building just, up a I'm, long game,
I'm
which
I'm just doing
I'm
a critical
fan of.
Kind of summary of what
You're
I...
You're just shitting on Bodega.
I wasn't shitting on it. I thought it was good. I'm just saying these are my thoughts. Okay. From it.
It's all right.
They weren't even criticisms. Jeez. They weren't even things to change. Normally, when you
why don't
do
you
it,
go
I'm
write
like,
some YouTube comments or something.
Yeah, go write some YouTube comments about it, Lewis.
Yeah, I'll tweet at
you. Under one of your many pseudonyms, XXX yeah, Pussy Destroyer 420 XXX.
One of your undercover handles on the internet.
wow, that was great. I enjoyed it. I can't wait to hear the conclusion, the gripping conclusion.
Well, there might not be one. This is like turning into like a soap opera, and I'm loving every minute of it.
I just kind of realized that none of the episodes have anything to do with, like there's occasional callbacks, but there's no consistency. It's always just a fresh... No. Two-page bodega does some shit and probably kills a bunch of people.
No, but you know what? That's like in a lot of series, a lot of like pilot seasons and stuff like that. That happens, you know. And then when the show gets renewed for a second season, that's when they start to add in like a story arc and stuff. You know,
is this bodega
individual
season two?
Parts. No, well, this is still season one.
Still season one. Okay.
No. I think this is season two now because I think what's happened is season one's ended, right?
And it's when did
been
it
really
end?
It's been had a real critical success.
No, you know, when did season one end though? Like at what point? Because like you have to end on like a high and a cliffhanger.
No, I don't think you do.
It's
not
been
in
like
Holly,
a bit of a
modern,
slow brew.
Not with like crappy sci-fi like Bodega, you know. It's just what happens. You know, people suddenly have like saying, "Oh my god, I really, really enjoyed Bodega. When's he coming back?" And you're like, "Do you know what? I'm gonna make a whole new series of Bodega novels, and they're gonna have cliffhangers at the end, and it's all gonna tie together in a wonderful arc." And you have all these plans. You know, before Bodega just had individual episodic adventures, but now we're gonna keep a story arc running through the whole series.
Yeah, we've got
like,
a team of writers,
Netflix.
Whole team. Oh, wow. Writers here. I've got a warehouse. I might have been the same warehouse you got in China, Sips. I get them to knock out the bodega stuff for me.
Oh, sweet. Yeah, that's a good idea.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's a guy who just comes up with quick, crazy words and names. That's what I love about this universe. It's that literally it's the same universe, except everyone has slightly stylish sounding names. It's the same thing with fantasy novels, right? Like, because you go to you pick up a fantasy novel, and the first thing you are introduced to is like three people with really cryptic fantasy style names.
Like,
you know?
I like it when they take a normal name and they just change it. Like, for instance, take Han Solo, Dan Solo, right? Luke has a normal name, Luke Skywalker, right? But you think about a lot of the characters they have is like Poe Dameron, right? It's
Darth
just,
could have been Garth.
Exactly. Like Poe could have been maybe Toe. That's a name, I'm sure. Toe Dameron and Dan Solo. It wouldn't work if they had those names,
Garth
right?
Darth Vader.
Instead of Frodo, it's Fredo, right? Instead of, you know, but Sam had a normal name, but Gandalf could just be called Ralph the Wizard. But instead, you have to add the fantasy names because it makes it seem...
Ralph the Wizard. Ralph. That would have made him better, actually.
They would, Ralph! Yeah, it's me, cool. Ralph the Wizard. What's cracking? How's it going, lads? But you've got to have those funky names because it sounds more distant and far away.
In the city of Itandale, the young barbarian mirror jasmine shifting surface Taran Blade, the unruly. It's like, what?
My balls.
I don't know.
You've got to have the funky names. It makes it seem like it's a cheap way of creating a universe. You just name, instead of just calling ale, you call it something like Flobjogger Ale. And people think, ooh, yeah, exotic. But I could make Flobjogger Ale right now. I just brew some ale and call it Flobjogger. Boom. But you think it's something fancy.
Oh, I see.
That's true, actually. It's true. Speaking of fancy ales, one last thing before we depart. BlizzCon in a couple of weeks, they're celebrating the 20th anniversary, or is it the 25th anniversary? No, it's the 20th anniversary of Diablo.
Wow. Okay. That's crazy.
It's nuts, eh? So they're going to have this thing outside the convention center. There's basically this big sort of pedestrian walkway thing with a big fountain outside the convention center, and it's nestled in between the Hilton and the Marriott, right? So it's like the big outdoor area. Like, you've been there before, Lewis, you probably know, right?
Yeah.
So out there, after the first day of BlizzCon at like 8 o'clock at night or whatever, they're going to have like a party to celebrate. And they did the same thing with Warcraft when it was World of Warcraft's 10th anniversary or whatever. And they serve drinks there. They get like a local brewery to brew up some beer and stuff. But then they theme it around, like, in this case, it'll be Diablo. So, and they did like Thunder Brew Ale for Warcraft when they did the Warcraft one. So it was like bottles of beer with like just a different label or whatever. And man, people were losing their shit over it. Like, people were like ordering it and like, oh, don't open it. I had to take it home. It's a collector's thing and stuff. Like, they were going crazy. And like, just because it had a different label. Like, it was just probably the same beer that they always brew for like whatever. And then because they slap on Thunder Brew Ale or whatever, it's like a big deal. I get it in some ways, but in other ways, it just makes me laugh.
You know what? When I was at TI5, or TI6, sorry, there were these guys that I've seen them at Dota events before. They brew like beers and ales and stuff like that. And they do the exact same thing. They call it like Mirana's Arrow, or they call it like Lich's, you know,
and everybody wants it like it. Right. And like, but not to drink it. Just
right. I mean, it's okay. Yeah. It's nice ale. But it's got like a Dotary kind of bottle. So these guys come up to us. So it's like me and Shane and a couple of the other presenters and stuff. We're standing around chatting. And these guys come over. And I was like, oh, hey, what's up? And he starts telling us about the ale. I was like, how's it going with the whole ale thing? Are you able to get it, like, you know, at the event and stuff? And he said, well, yeah, I've been emailing Valve about it. And he was like complaining about how he never get his back from them. And it's just like a real hassle, and how he doesn't understand them and they're idiots, blah, blah, blah. He was kind of polite, but he was also kind of obviously frustrated. Now, one of the people standing with us was like a very, very senior Valve guy. And he was like right there. He was just shooting the shit with us in between bits. And this guy comes up, and he just happens to be standing right next to him when he's running down Valve's PR and how they never get back to him, stuff like that. And so the Valve guy starts like engaging him in conversation without sort of revealing who he is and everything, sort of saying, well, I'm sure they have their reasons, I wouldn't worry about it and everything. And the guy's like, well, yeah, but I just wish they'd get back to me. He's like, well, look, I work for Valve. And the guy's face just like crashed. Like, he was just like, God. Oh my God. Like, it was humiliating for the guy. But I mean, luckily, the Valve guy was really nice about it and everything, explained the situation. But it was just like one of those things where you think of all the times and all the people to have that conversation in front of. It was brutal.
Man, I've done that a couple of times. Yeah. It happens,
it
doesn't
does
it?
Happen, yeah.
But it fucking sucks so bad when it happens.
I could just see the guy wanting to dig a hole and cover himself in ale and disappear.
Yeah, you sort of have a moment after something like that happens where you just have like a word with yourself and you're like, fucking, you rein yourself in. Don't fucking shoot your mouth off like that. Jeez, you're almost like you turn into like your parents inside your mind telling you yourself off for like doing something dumb like
it's
that.
It's all, you know, when we were talking about people getting angry at video games, at video games because of something your team's done, that can be rage inducing. But if it's something I've done that's stupid, I can't get like angry with myself. I just feel crushing disappointment, and I just feel like
it's the worst,
oh
isn't
my
it?
God, I'm so fucking useless. Like, your self-worth at that moment just plummets.
Oh no, it's the worst. It's the worst feeling, eh? And then you're like, you're trying desperately to find things to just like get your mind off it and cheer you up, but like deep down you're just like so full of self-loathing. You're just
that's
like,
exactly how I feel after all recording this podcast. It's so disappointing. I'm sorry, guys. I'm sorry how bad it is this week.
Yeah, this is not this has not been a highlight week for sure.
That was a terrible podcast. Thank you for sticking it out till the end.
And thank you for listening to this heavily edited podcast.
Thank you for listening to the...
It's only going to be 10 minutes long.
Yeah, that's the dream. All right. We've recorded for an hour and 40. So, yeah, let's see how much actually makes it into the final cut.
I reckon we could get 50 minutes out of this. I reckon we could just...
There's got to be at least 20 minutes. Come on.
Yeah,
it'll be fine.
Yeah, we'll be all right. All right, thank you, everybody. And we'll see you next week, hopefully, for more of this great band.
We'll be back.
top shelf.
Top bands. Bye.